you look at somebody that's successful, or you look at somebody that is feels like they've got the world at their fingertips, like everything they touch turns to gold. Whatever they do, they seem to be at the top of the game. Behind the doors, and they're scared, they're nervous. They just don't let that those insecurities and that fear and that doubt paralyze them from moving forward. Yeah. They just took the initiative to continue to take action and move forward. And all you see is them at the top of the mountain. You didn't see the climb behind the mountain. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday. My main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, buddy?
Amazing. Great day to be alive.
Great feeling great. Great day to be alive. I like we just start Whiskey Wednesdays.
Yeah.
A great day to be alive.
Feeling amazing. Good stuff. A lot of stuff on today's agenda, huh?
Lots of stuff. Let's hear what all the stuff is that we're going to talk about today.
Okay. We got MBAs, getting your master's degree. Is it even worth it anymore? Mm-hmm. We're going over this U.S. bank survey about Americans feeling like they have less control over their finances. We're going to break that down. Then we're going into some really good STR stuff. Is it real? Is it true? A secret sauce. What do you think about that? We're going into finding the correct property, rushing into this. Do you need to have a real love for the game, or can you just have someone else do it for you? And then kind of ending on inflation. Got a lot of stuff, jam-packed. Starting out with, once again, man, you know how I love my Yahoo Finance. I love my Yahoo Finance.
You do like Yahoo Finance. It seems like we get a lot of our finance news from Yahoo
Finance. They
have
good stuff, man. They have good ones. This was from Bloomberg. They were talking about the payoff of a U.S. MBA has slipped again. Mm. A new analysis is saying that it may not be worth it. And, you know, that's kind of been a big sell, at least I would think for a lot of generations, but mine in particular, going to college was a big deal. First in my family, get that four-year degree. It was huge. You got to go do it. And then now I'm in the workforce and I'm going, everybody cares about experience. No one cares about that piece of paper. What do you think about it? Is this college even worth it? Kind of a tough one. Puts you right into it.
It's not tough for me. It's easy for me. It might not be what a lot of people like to hear. I think college is a complete waste of time outside of certain industries. Like you have to go to college if you want to be a doctor or a physician, a lawyer. There's certain things. Right. I don't even know if you have to go to college to be a lawyer. You have to pass the bar,
but maybe not.
I just think you have to pass maybe.
Yeah.
I think that there are certain professions. Mm-hmm. So don't blow up my inbox with people saying you're an idiot.
You have to go to college for this.
I've been employing people for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I have never asked for a college degree. I ask you for your college degree?
No.
I think most employers, I'm a part of a lot of groups with business owners. Most of us care more about the person, their experience, their character, way more than we care about a college degree.
Yeah.
And now, college degrees do show a level of commitment to start something, follow through with it, show up, basically just be able to follow a process through to the end.
Right.
So there are some things there. And are there things that you learn? Absolutely. If you're 4 years doing something, you should learn something. But I mean, I remember I graduated college 25 years ago and it was, I haven't showed which I've always worked for myself. So that not really applicable. I've never showed my degree to anybody.
Right.
But my buddy, one of my roommates back in college ended up going through getting his 4-year degree, went and got his MBA, and he was applying for jobs. This was 25 years ago when I feel like degrees were even, you were getting a better return on them than you are today. I mean, it's study after study showing you're just not getting a good return on those 4-year degrees or even MBAs. Mm-hmm. At the time, he was the same thing. He was looking, I remember he was applying right out of college for managing these little, a little ink shop that was filling up ink cartridges. And I'm like, man, you got an MBA? And some of the jobs that he was applying for, he could have literally went out of high school and tried to get those jobs. And and it was, I don't know that he's used it today with his career path. He ended up going into sales and ultimately got the experience. Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm not a fan of college. My kids, I'm telling them, don't, Don't waste your time unless you decide it's something. It's a path that mm-hmm. college is a requirement for the path that they want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of an unpopular opinion, a little bit getting more popular.
I think it is.
I think it's getting more and more popular that
I've
kind of, there's been plenty of times where, you know, a lot of my friends and our family and they're mm-hmm. like, you know, and they've done really well for themselves going to college and becoming physicians. We've mm-hmm. got a group of friends that are all physicians and mm-hmm. they have to go to college, right? Yeah. And they're very, their kids are saying, hey, listen, we're going to college. Dave, mm-hmm. who used to sit in that seat with us, he's big into college. You know, him and Kelly are saying, hey, listen, we want our kids to go to college and get a get that 4-year degree. So I'm not saying that my view of the world is spot on. But I mean, when you read a lot of these articles, there's not a good return on investment as far as the dollars it takes to go get that 4-year degree. I think they're overpriced for what they are. As far as trying to make an argument that it's a financial return on that investment is getting tougher and tougher because of the cost of college as well.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think it's completely on the cost of the college. I think there's going to be a big turn to trade schools.
100%.
I think that's going to be the new one. I think college is out, trade school is in. Or something, I don't know if you even got to go to college for coding and that kind of thing. Like maybe you do, or maybe that's going to be like a new.
That might be another trade type school. I don't know.
I don't know, but I think that's going to be the new sway.
I am a big fan of trade schools, by the way. Yeah. Like I talked to Wyatt about that. You know, he loves to build stuff and you do things with his hands. And I'm like, man, trade school might be depending on what type of business you want to get into, it could be a really good road to run down.
I totally agree. Okay, moving into our next one, this U.S. Bank. Let's read the headline. I just like it. Okay. A crisis of confidence is reshaping the American dream, U.S. Bank survey finds. So to give the quick gist to the listeners here, the U.S. Bank, they surveyed 5,000 people and they found that a lot of Americans, you know, they're making these financial choices, they're budgeting, they're reducing leisure spending, they're creating these financial plans. But an overwhelming majority, for instance, 81% say it's harder to retire now than it was for their parents. 77% say that the current economic environment influences their retirement timeline. They go into these things about how they're not feeling really secure in their finances, but yet you see an overwhelming leap. 93% say the family and community relationships are important. 88% say Americans say owning a home is a key measure of financial success. 93% retirement savings, that's a huge key to success. But they're not feeling confident, even though they're trying. So I kind of wanted to go into this, just questioning of, you know, someone who's younger and now I'm surrounded by successful entrepreneurs, successful people. I want to learn, you know, what they did differently, what they think about this. You know, we hear some older people say they just need to work harder. They need to do things better. So let's start off with this.
Okay.
What are people lacking nowadays? Is it a better chance at things? Is it a certain mindset, certain skills? Where do you think people are not meeting the mark?
100%, I believe it starts with mindset.
Okay.
100%. Mm-hmm. I don't think that a lot of other things have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, the fundamentals of having a good, solid retirement are all the same. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a lot more opportunity now. Mm-hmm. I think young people think there's less opportunity than there was back in the day. I completely disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I do think it's all mindset. And I think it's because we're fed so much bad news, so much like doom and gloom, so much of this, the article you just pulled up, you know, it's like, man, you're not going to be able to do this. It's getting tougher. You know, it's, you know, good luck. You know, back in the day we were able to buy a house. Well, you can't today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear that over and over and over again. I remember when Teresa and I bought my first house, I had a salary of type into your thing. Okay. What would be my take home pay on a $31,000 a year salary? Monthly take-home pay.
On a $31,000
a year salary.
What is my monthly take-home pay?
What's my monthly take-home pay? Because I remember I had a $31,000 a year salary. So my monthly take-home pay is $2,500. Is about about $2,000 right there.
Yeah.
$2,100.
Yeah.
So I had a take-home pay of about $2,000 a month. That's what I thought it was, $2,100. Mm-hmm. And we bought our first house. It was at 9.5% interest, $115,000. My payment was just like about $1,100. $1,100. I had to pay utilities on top of that and everything else. Yeah. So my housing expense, making $2,100 a month, mm-hmm. was about $1,500 a month. And not leaving me a whole hell of a lot extra for car payments and food and everything else, right? Yeah. And a huge percentage of my income went toward housing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I look back then and think, okay, that was a huge move that we made. Mm-hmm. I could have said I'm going to rent for a heck of a lot less than that.
Yeah.
And waited and waited and waited. And maybe it was a better idea or not a better idea. But mm-hmm. I was just looking at somebody's take-home pay today. And we're looking at it saying, okay, what can they afford? I'm not saying I feel like that's a little overstretching, right? Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have housing expenses of $1,500 when your take home pay is 21.
Yeah.
That's probably a little bit overboard.
Yeah.
Back then you could fog a mirror and get a loan. Mm-hmm. So it was actually easier to make bad decisions.
A mirror.
And get a loan. That was in, we bought our first house in 2000.
Okay.
2000. And so we were coming off the dot-com bubble and you know, the economy wasn't great. Housing wasn't great. It was right before it started going up, but there was a lot of loan products available, and which led to the big fall off and crisis we had in 2008. And so back then you could over leverage, frankly. And that was over leveraged. My point of it is you can make it happen if you want to make it happen. And what we didn't have back then was cell phones. Right. That were like little computers, and every single time we turned around, we're hearing something is getting bombed or something's getting shot up or something's getting blown up and the economy's dropping and the dollar's not worth a shit and we're going into a recession. How long have we heard we're going into a recession?
Dude, a lot.
Literally for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. When did we start hearing it? Back at the end of 2020 or middle of 2022 when rates started skyrocketing. We're going into a recession. It could be worse than the Great Depression.
Yeah.
You know, buckle up. You know, it's all of this fear. We know bad news sells, right? Mm-hmm. We know it sells. The issue is it's so over the top, accessible to us. It's in our face all day, every day. So you have to be able to say, hey, listen, I got to step away from that. Mm-hmm. And I got to look for the opportunities. I got to look for those things. The other thing that I think that back then we understood the concept of, hey, listen, you're going to, you make some money, you save some money. Mm-hmm. And then you start putting it away for a rainy day. Mm-hmm. Then you start investing it. And we just did the old school way of what I don't think works. I'm not saying this works, but you save for your retirement. You contribute to your 401k. Mm-hmm. You know, you just let it grow for 40 or 50 years and one day you're going to be okay, right? Mm-hmm. And we believe that. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was good about that is it gave us a plan to start to save and then a plan to invest, right? Mm-hmm. Now we hear of the overnight successes. We hear of the crypto investments. Yeah. We hear of, you know, when short-term rentals were going crazy, doubling your money in a year, a property just doubling its value in 2 or 3 years because it was skyrocketing in value so much. And so, and we like that stuff is also right in our face. So what we think is we think, okay, I'm not making quite enough right now. So I'm going to double down and take that income and I'm going to start to invest. We skip a major step. Because in my opinion, there's steps to financial independence. The first step is your active income. You got to make more money. Most people don't have investing problems. Most people start with income problems. And so whether that's figuring out how to make more money in your current job, whether that's changing jobs, whether that's adding a side hustle, we need more money coming in.
Yeah.
And we need enough money coming in that we can now live below our means and start to save. Yeah. This is where I think a lot of people start to struggle too. We say, okay, the next step is not making more money and then investing it. The next step is start to save it over time. So we build up this nest egg, build up your rainy day fund, build up, you know, X amount of months of living expenses. I would do 6 months to a year of living expenses before I thought of investing anything. And then ultimately, then we start to still continue to live below our means. We got our savings account built up. That third step is the investment account. And we got to look at it in steps in like longer time horizons, not like what can I make in a year or what can I make in 60 days and how can I day trade this stock or this crypto or this this thing that's going to give me this quick hit. We have to say, okay, in 5 years, where do I want this to be? In 10 years, in 15, in 20. Like look at a longer time horizon. And that's why you'll start to get to very much appreciate long-term assets like real estate, for example, tangible assets that are going to go up in value over time. But you start with understanding that it's a three phase process of mm-hmm. I got to make money, I got to live below my means,
yeah.
I got to save money, mm-hmm. continue to live below my means, and start to put money in the bank and not get attracted to go spend that somewhere.
Right.
And then ultimately, once that is built up, I don't drain it. I start to build up now my investment account. Mm. So that third account, and then I start to invest. And you say, hey, how risky do I really want to get here? And you know, the younger you are, the more risky you can be. Yeah. The issue becomes when you are less risky on the front end when you're young, you're usually so much further ahead of the person that took those big risks on the front end in 5, 10, 15 years because it was just like that slow and steady wins the race, right? You're like, hey, listen, I'm gonna follow this process. But that's not what we hear on the news. It's not what we see on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's not what we see in our feeds, like on our computer all the time. Mm-hmm. We just hear how bad everything is.
Right.
And when we hear how bad everything is, we start to buy into it. Mm. And so long-winded answer, where it starts, I think, is between your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what stuck out to me was blinders and belief. People back then, they didn't have their phones. They didn't have all this bad news. They were able to focus. They could put blinders on and go, this is what needs to happen. And they were able to focus better. But also you had a belief, you know, in the survey, it's saying that people are budgeting. They're doing less leisure stuff. They're doing financial plans. So they're trying. They're trying to do things. But they didn't seem to have the belief that it's actually going to pay off later down the road, which it seems like those two things go hand in hand. If you're only seeing negatives all the time, why would you believe what you're doing is going to have those payoffs? Right. And you kind of answered the question number two, what should people do? You talked about the three categories there. Going into accountability, who's at fault for this, man? Oh, I love accountability. Is this people, the news, too much news? Is this people just wanting the quick hit of dopamine, picking up the phone? Who's at fault? Is it a little bit everywhere?
No, I'll tell you how you can find out who's at fault in any situation.
Okay.
Go grab this thing called a mirror.
Oh, dude.
And look in it.
Okay. Right?
And so at the end of the day, we choose what we consume.
Yeah.
We choose what we're going to, how we're going to navigate through life. We choose who we're going to associate with. We choose, you know, the messages that we're going to buy into or not buy into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and unfortunately now you have to have a pretty good filter on and you have to have a pretty good way to navigate this stuff. Mm-hmm. You can't just completely disconnect from it. I mean, it's in our faces all the time. You can't, you gotta kind of know what's going on. Yeah. You gotta still be, live your life and be around people and everything else, but you choose what you're going to, what you're actually going to consume, right? Like I told you, like when we were doing Whiskey Wednesday, sometimes we talk about hot topics. I'm like, bro, I can hardly talk about any of these because I don't watch the news anymore. I literally shut it out because it was just too much. It's like, hey, listen, I'm tired of hearing the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah.
And, you know, just another canned version of how shitty everything is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm kind of done with it. Like, I look around and I'm like, man, we're pretty fortunate. We're pretty blessed. And so let's focus on those things. Let's focus on the things that we can go do and make happen. And so, who's to blame is that stuff's out there, right? Yeah. The media companies, they're there to make money. The Instagram influencers are out there to get your attention, and the attention is the new currency. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, attention, we've gotten desensitized to stuff. So things just get more and more extreme and more in your face and everything else in order to capture our attention. Mm-hmm. And so that's their job. Mm-hmm. It's not their fault that they're doing that. That's the business they're in. And so, I cannot like the messages they're putting out, but I also have this thing called free will, and I can decide whether I want to consume it or not.
Yeah.
You know,
this is such an overarching message. I think when you look at successful people, right? In my opinion, if I'm listening to you here, right, and I look at David Goggins, if I look at the Tim Grover, The Winning Book, if I look at Hormozy, Patrick Bidet, if I look at any successful guy that I'm looking up at, they almost all, I think they actually all have that same message. It's you. No one's coming to save you. It's what you do. It's just you don't get to blame other people. And that's so interesting because for I think younger, when it comes to younger people, the, like you said, attention is the new currency. That's what sells. So if I'm a younger person and I'm looking at what sells, who's going to be my new model? Who's going to be the new Patrick Bidavid? Who's going to be the new person that I look up at? Is it the guy making YouTube videos that vlogs, right? That's just getting my attention. That's just now wasting my time. Or do I now have to look at somebody that's going to tell you, no, man, you got to grab a hold of your life. You got to do these things. It's no one else to blame. And so this kind of, you know, I'm at this age where I still feel like I get to look at those people. But these younger generations, man, they're watching these other people where it's just about the quick hit attention, no long-term thinking. It's how do I make this video blow up right now? How do I go viral right now? And it's, I don't think it still has that personable, like you got to take action for yourself mindset. I think it's, we're slowly going away from that, but I love it, man. I think we got to keep preaching. And that's the gap between the haves, the have nots, who's going to listen.
And it always has been. Yeah. Nothing has changed. We just see it more now, right?
It's way more.
It's just front and center where everything, we're able to see everything, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that a lot of that has changed. Like you still, you know, personal responsibility, self-reliance, all that stuff has been, you know, extreme ownership.
Yeah.
It's what's built. Mm-hmm. It's what built America. It's what built every successful business person, like family. It is like that's been there forever. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. There's if you look up to people who are making things happen and that seems to be a common denominator.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something to that.
Yeah. Okay. What skills do you think people need nowadays? Do they need to be good at sales? Do they need to be good at working, talking to people? You know, you need to maybe have a side business. You need to grow your, is that a big thing? Or now should you lean into, like we said, trades or coding? What do you think is a thing that's going to help you give that competitive edge?
100%. I tell my kids this all the time. I think that the number one skill set is ultimately comes down to communication. Because it filters into influence.
Right.
So influence and communication, right? Being able to look somebody in the eye, be able to communicate what you're trying to do. Like we're always selling. You're always selling. You're selling yourself all the time.
Right.
And being able to communicate in the world, you know, as we continue to progress is becoming a lost art. I really think that is something that is that the younger generation is actually losing, that is like going down. The ability to be in a room with somebody and actually communicate with them. Mm. You know, you've all been in a room, and those people that are good communicators, they obviously almost always have the most influence, good or bad, right? You can have, you can use that communication skill for good or bad. And you look at the worst of the worst, and they'll
get you some of that whiskey, man. Get you some of that whiskey, dude. I'll take over. I take over. Yeah, the influence is bad, man. Whenever you sit in a room and some guy can start popping off, can make a joke, make people start laughing, and then everyone – and it also, in my opinion, when you're someone is able to come into a room and break the ice – in my opinion, at least, it makes everyone else in that room feel more comfortable and more open to talk. He doesn't have to like – now be the guiding light into all conversations. It can kind of, whoever has that skill, ooh, you can bring people together, I think, pretty fast.
It opens almost unlimited doors.
Yeah.
You know, and then ultimately, you use that to run down whatever path you're going to run down. You know, as far as a trade goes, there's still lots of trades, right? I mean, even with the advent of AI taking away some of the creative jobs possibly, right? I think that's... Yeah. The first jobs that are the AI is really, you know, taken out is some of the creative design type stuff, like, you know, like editing stuff. I mean, it's just, it's fast, right?
Yeah.
But if you're in a world where you really understand how to communicate and you can influence and really help yourself open doors that, you know, different opportunities, maybe you have to make a pivot, maybe you have to do something different. I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, if there's one skill you should focus on, it's communication skills.
Yeah.
100%.
Totally agree.
You know, and I do, and I think, and I tell them this all the time. I say, because I think in your world, there are fewer and fewer people who are really good communicators.
Right.
And when that's never going to go away. Mm-hmm. And when you can be in a room and be a great communicator and have influence and use it for good, you know, and you put yourself in a pretty powerful position.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. When you were growing up, did you kind of have these insecurity, or maybe not insecurities, but let's go fears and concerns that these other younger Americans are having right now? And did you feel that type of way at that time? What'd you do about it? You just hunkered down, you put the blinders on, you put the belief in what you were doing. You looked at yourself, looked in the mirror, and you started chugging along.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. When you're young, you feel uncomfortable and you're scared and you're nervous and you have self-doubt around every corner.
Yeah.
Right. And ultimately, you end up, you know, I will say one thing that I do love about athletics is you learn at an early age to deal with disappointment, to deal with failure. You don't win every game. You don't hit every ball. You don't score every goal. Mm. And you start to learn that it's okay to try and miss. Mm. And so I did have that growing up. And so it wasn't just because I'm scared to death or I have self-doubt and I don't know what I'm doing. Mm. I also, if it didn't work, I wasn't quitting.
Right.
Because that was another thing in athletics that athletics teaches you. And I think, you know, as a young kid, you're like, hey, you committed to the team. You know, we don't quit. You know, there's just, it's not an option. Quitting is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that as you navigate anything new, you just have to realize how bad you're going to suck at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have this tendency, especially people who call themselves perfectionists, right? Yeah. Well, I'm a perfectionist. One, that's just an excuse that you don't want to try to do anything and keep trying. Mm-hmm. You can be a perfectionist and mess up and realize that if it's the first time that you do something, you're probably going to suck at it because there's somebody that's done it 1,000 times and they're going to be way better than And so you might be, you know, a rock star in your own world. You might be a perfectionist in one thing, but you go down another path and run down another road, you're going to suck and it's okay. Uh-huh. And it doesn't mean that you like people that, you know, like you look at somebody that's successful or you look at somebody that is feels like they've got the world at their fingertips, like everything they touch turns to gold, whatever they do, they seem to be at the top of the game. Behind the doors and they're scared, they're nervous.
Yeah.
They just don't let those insecurities and that fear and that doubt paralyze them from moving forward.
Yeah.
They just took the initiative to continue to take action and move forward. And all you see is them at the top of the mountain. You didn't see the climb behind the mountain, you know? And so it's, I mean, as young kids, I think that, you know, don't get me started on this soapbox. I might go viral, you know, last time I gave parenting advice, I went viral.
So let's see.
I think that the biggest problem we've had is when somebody is insecure or doubting or, you know, they feel uncomfortable that we've told them, well, maybe you're in the wrong place. Maybe you need to make, you know, do something different, all the way to the point where we tell them they're in the wrong body. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, it gets to a point where we've gone so far to say, hey, no, that's actually normal life.
Yeah.
You know, when you're young and your body's changing, you're doing stuff, you're going to feel weird and awkward and everything else. Mm-hmm. It's no different when we walk into something, you know, that we're trying for the first time. You know, I talk to 60-year-old people that are, you know, they're done with close to the end of their earning career and they're realizing that, man, I didn't, like we were talking about at first, I didn't set myself up for retirement. I got to do something new, and they're scared to death. But they, you know, you talk to them and say, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to doubt. It's okay to be scared. Let's take some action. And it's going to be awkward, and it's going to be, you know, you're probably going to mess up. And but it's okay because it's not going to be the end of the world. And then by the end of the day, 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to look back and say, man, I can't believe where I came because I knew nothing about this investing. Let's talk about short-term rental investing. Yeah. I knew nothing about this. And now all of a sudden, I look like an absolute rock star.
Yeah.
And I was scared to death at first. And so I think that when we talk about young people and it is, we keep telling them that, you know, it's like something must be wrong if you have this self-doubt and this awkwardness and these insecurities. And at the end of the day, we need to say, hey, that's normal. That's called adolescence. That's called that's called growing up. That's called being 20 years old right out of high school or college and not knowing what career path you're going to run down and probably going to change a few times. And it's okay.
Yeah. Oh, man. I feel like people would just go back a couple seconds and re-listen to that because I thought that was really, really solid. It made me think of your conversation with Dr. Ross Maron, the anxiety guy. I'm trying to find the exact number for people to go back and listen to it. It was fantastic, though. But what you're saying really resonates, man. Episode 270.
270.
It's reshaping your mind, making anxiety work for you. It's I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you on a lot of levels. Go back and re-listen to it. But let's jump in, man. We've been here for almost 30 minutes talking about this.
We haven't talked about short-term rentals yet.
Bro. I know. So, we're going. Okay, so here we go. Short-term rental. Someone comes up to you. They go, I know the secret sauce. I know the secret to doing this. Only I have the key. No. I can see your face. If people aren't watching, this is fantastic. What do you think about these people? Huh?
This drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Because we hear, I've got the three secrets, or I've got you to your point, the secret sauce, or this is behind the paywall. I just now discovered the way to succeed with short-term rentals.
Yeah.
And I mean, a version of that is in our faces all day, every day. And it drives me crazy. First of all, this is not rocket science.
Yeah.
Right? First of all, we didn't just discover a cure for cancer,
right,
and we're you know, it's breaking news to everybody. We're real estate investors.
And
we buy short-term rentals, mm-hmm, and we have to understand three basic concepts: acquisition, management, marketing. Mm-hmm. None of those are groundbreaking secrets.
Right.
Whether it comes to consumer behavior, how you're going to underwrite deals, how you're going to set properties up. And so it drives me crazy when you see the marketers out there saying, you know, I just discovered this, or you got to jump on my webinar for that, or you got to pay me for this. Like, how much stuff do we have inside of our mentorship masterclass that we don't talk about on podcast, or that we wouldn't just put out for free anywhere online?
There's a lot. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of content.
Do we hold it behind a paywall, as a secret?
We release a lot of stuff, man. we release a lot.
There's nothing behind. There's nothing that we have that is some big secret.
Right.
It's understanding the details and executing on those details. Mm-hmm. And you can share those all the time. Like, there's things that work and there's things that don't work. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I probably give the word secret sauce or secrets a bad rap, because that's not how we operate. Mm-hmm. I think it is just some marketing ploy that, you know,
yeah,
maybe it gets clicks.
It's really good. It's a good headline. You know, it gets people clicked on it.
Yeah, whatever.
You know? Yeah. Okay. Here's my next question. We're going into a really saturated market, right? I'm going into somewhere in Tampa, Florida, tons of people. It's really saturated. Finding the perfect property, the perfect property, how is that going to help me beat out my competition? Is it because the best property has a certain amount of beds and baths? It's been renovated. What's going to make this perfect property stand out in such a saturated market?
First of all, there's not a perfect property.
Okay, just making sure.
You're not finding a perfect property.
Right.
Right? Perfect properties don't exist. Mm-hmm. And it's what we're able to do with these properties, because the perfect property is always sold to people by saying, hey, listen, I'm going to go help you find, like you say, the perfect property for this market. Saturated is going to stand out. That's a combination of what kind of an experience are you creating? Who's your target audience? Like, you could have a perfect property for a couple that's going to be a disaster property for a multifamily reunion, right? Mm. And so it's your identity, what you're trying to do is put together a perfect experience for a specific traveler. Mm. And that's not as property specific as a lot of people think it is. Mm-hmm. We need to have revenue potential within a market. We need to understand the proximity to the profit drivers, as we call them, the things that people want to go do in the area. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be 3 hours from the beach and call it a beach house, right? And so don't get me wrong. Right. There are elements to the property in proximity that add to that perfect experience. But how you stand out in this crowd, in these saturated markets, it's not with the perfect property. It's by setting up this amazing experience for a target audience that says, hey, this is the perfect property for me. Mm. And usually it's narrowing down where only 10% of the people are going to think it's perfect for them. Mm-hmm. And you can make a lot of money with that 10% of people. And 90% are going to look at it and say, that's not even close to what I want. Mm. Right. And so that's how we're able to do that. And so it's understanding what does that take in the market? And this is where it gets really hard for a lot of people that hire these done for you services and turnkey properties. Yep. And they say, hey, listen, I'm going to go buy this property. We found this property. Well, whoever's selling them that property might have this vision for the property and they know exactly what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. The new investor has no clue what they're going to do. They just think, because I have a property on the beach and or I have a property with amazing views and a great location, mm-hmm. that it's going to be awesome and it's going to do well. Mm. Not true. Mm. There are properties that are beautiful, great proximity, great views on the beach, all that stuff. Because if you are, so are your neighbors. Your next door neighbor has the exact same proximity as you, the exact same view as you. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is your street has a whole bunch of those neighbors. They're not all perfect properties. They're not all going to operate at the top because not everybody's going to have the same vision and dial it in as far as the perfect experience for a specific guest. Mm-hmm. And that's where they don't deliver. That's mm-hmm. where those turnkey type of programs mm-hmm. fall short a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And we talk to a lot of investors who buy them mm-hmm. and we look at it and they actually do probably have potential. Mm-hmm. They just fall short because the property in and of itself is not your product. Mm-hmm. It's what kind of an experience are you able to put together with that property? Mm-hmm. And so the investor buys this property mm-hmm. and they don't understand the back end of it. Mm-hmm. And then they're getting crushed in the marketplace and they're like, hey, why is your property killing me? Well, you're making double the amount of money I'm making. What are you doing different? Yeah. I have a better property than you. Yeah. Sometimes people have better properties than us and we have more revenue.
Yeah.
Because you understand that back end stuff.
Mm. What really speaks out to me as you're going on about this is how, you know, we talked just a second ago about sharing the secrets. What do we have behind the secret sauce? And I feel like something that you've done as you built this business that's become really, really good for people, especially that listen and watch the podcast, is we've outlined the complexities of this asset class. Whereas if you just buy the perfect property, you can't think like that's just going to be, you're now at the top. We've talked about the design. We've talked about the photography. We've talked about the underwriting. We've talked about your target audience. We've talked about the amenities. We've talked about so many things. And just the idea of you're going to be able to get this one thing and you're going to operate at the top, that doesn't make sense, especially, we've gone through it. And so you can listen to as much as you want. But I think our secret sauce is we've told people how complex this is in a way. We've shared the truth about it.
It's what we go back to and say, It's not a silver bullet.
Right.
It's 100 golden BBs, mm-hmm. right? It's a whole bunch of things mm-hmm. to ultimately the cumulative effect of all those things mm-hmm. equals really good success.
Right.
But it's not one secret. It's not one thing that, okay, this is the perfect property for this market. That's not the case. It's mm-hmm. That's a piece of a puzzle.
Yeah. Love it. Moving on to our next thing. Some people, the timer's running out. We just hit, we're in September, about to hit October. And people are going, man, I hear about this bonus depreciation or these things. I want to get into this. They're rushing to get this property, right? They're rushing to find the one. Some people may have that time thing in their head. What do you tell somebody if they're trying to get to this ASAP? They're trying to do this.
I say run as hard and as fast as you can, mm-hmm. but slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is, you do not want to rush into a long-term buying decision. These are major decisions. These mm-hmm. are major financial moves mm-hmm. when you're buying properties and you're setting them up and everything else. And because you're hitting Q4 and you're like, man, I'm going to get this big tax savings. And I need mm-hmm. to have this write-off and I need this and that mm-hmm. and the other. Mm-hmm. And you rush into making a bad buying decision. Mm-hmm. And those are really hard to go back and erase. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you end up selling a property. You end up having to recapture all those savings that you worked so hard to get. And you end up losing money on a property, typically in those situations. Mm-hmm. And so I always say, do not rush in to these types of properties and decisions. Mm-hmm. But take action. Like be running down the road as hard and as fast. Underwrite a lot of properties. Be looking. Because you might find a really good deal doing that, but don't just go rush in and buy something to buy it. Mm. And this time of year, Q4, is when we see this more often than not, where we have a lot of properties come across our desk, mm-hmm. underwriting desk and the acquisitions desk, and Jacob's looking at him saying, man, he says no to more properties this time of year because there's a lot of properties sent to him that just flat out are not going to be good long-term investments.
Okay. Wow, that's really interesting. So do you think people should just wait till next year?
No, No, absolutely not. Okay. You might, you for sure should be looking.
Okay.
You should be in acquisition mode. Yeah. I mean, you might come across that good property again. Mm-hmm. Like I would be taking massive action right now, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean there's a lot of markets that are still very limited inventory. And, yeah. and so you could be running down a road as hard and as fast as you want, but just the right property is not coming available. The one that has right. the right potential for you, for your property goals mm. is not a coming available. Mm. But no, we don't, I wouldn't ever sit and wait either.
Right.
I would say, hey, listen, I'm going to run down the road. Mm-hmm. It's, you have plenty of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, quarter okay. four, you could find the perfect property that's fully furnished in December.
Yeah.
And close on it. I mean, if you, depending on your loan product, if, I mean, I'm assuming you can get the loan closed and done and it's in service and it's already being rented out. It was turnkey. Mm-hmm. Might be a good, really good option in December.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying wait. I'm right. saying right now there's a lot of people that are saying, hey, listen, we'll deliver properties in 30 days or 60 days. That's stupid. Like yeah. if it takes you 180 days to find the right property, wait 180 days.
Right.
There's no timeline on finding the right property. If it might be next week, mm-hmm. it might be tomorrow, it mm. might be 6 months from now.
Right.
We don't know. That's mm. why you're always looking. We're in acquisition mode for okay. sure. Okay. And you know, there's a lot of investors who have been looking mm-hmm. most of the year and they're getting really nervous. They're saying, well, I have been looking, Sean, mm-hmm. and nothing's come available. Well, you don't know if tomorrow the right one comes available. So don't stop right. looking. Absolutely. Right. You don't want to get discouraged because it can be discouraging mm-hmm. in a lot of markets because there's a lot of very limited inventory mm-hmm. and wait to see what happens to inventory if the Fed makes a couple more rate cuts and yeah. mortgages drop a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that's going to release a lot of buyers into the marketplace, which is going to negatively affect our inventory again. Mm. And so it's just a matter, it's a game of patience. Mm. It's like, okay, I can't get discouraged. I have to continue to underwrite. I have to continue to look because mm. I don't know if the right property is going to come tomorrow, 3 months from now, or 6 months from right. now. I just don't know. And so I have mm. to be in the game.
Yeah.
Because if you're not in the game, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
And so it's a matter of staying in the game and staying aggressive and mm. taking massive action. Mm. Just don't rush to sign on the dotted right. line if you're not finding the right property.
Mm. Because when you do find the right property, it's...
And you've got to be able to act quickly.
Yeah.
So on the other side of that coin is yeah. when the right property comes, because you've been diligent and educating yourself and underwriting right. a lot of deals and you recognize the right property, then you've got to be able to act quick. Mm. And so, but that's not being rushed into mm. a decision. That's saying, hey, listen, I really understand the market. Mm. I understand how to navigate this market. And I've understand.
Been waiting on this thing.
Yeah.
I've been waiting on it. I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready to pounce, yeah, right?
I love it. Okay. Okay. And this is my question I have here. Would you recommend this asset class to anyone who wants to diversify and has the money to spend, or do you really need to love and care for the game? This question came out of the idea of someone getting burnt out, right? They have the money and so they can just,
yeah.
they can get into it and it's fine, but they don't have the best reviews. They don't put the best stuff in. Or does this really require someone to really care about this, to really put love and attention into this? Or can you pass this off to somebody else?
This asset class is very front end loaded as far as capital mm-hmm. and time, mm-hmm. as far as like what you're going to need to contribute to it. So mm-hmm. should you be interested in the asset class? Yeah. Because okay. now long-term, mm-hmm. that question sounds like that usually doesn't get us burned out.
Okay. But
that usually is, it's a miserable 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
If I hate the asset class, I would never, I'm not I call lifestyle assets for a reason. Mm-hmm. There, real estate's a wide world. There's a mm-hmm. lot of really good asset classes that you can build a lot of wealth with. Mm-hmm. I'm a believer that real estate is the best avenue for most Americans to build mm-hmm. wealth mm-hmm. Because of a lot of the different reasons we talked about. You know, note pay down, yeah. appreciation, depreciation with taxes,
yeah.
and being able to leverage mm-hmm. these properties and mm-hmm. get a really good return on that leverage. However, there's a lot of roads in real estate right now. Pick one that you mm-hmm. like. Pick one you're interested in. Maybe you right. like strip malls. Maybe you like something else. Mm-hmm. Because the burnout with short-term rentals comes on the front end where it's very intensive and you maybe just don't want to put in the work. Mm-hmm. And so then you set yourself up to fail from the very beginning because mm-hmm. you're not doing what it takes to succeed in the first place.
Right.
If you're managing a property, mm-hmm. then absolutely, you better love hospitality because right. you're going to burn out really quick when you're dealing with check-ins and check-outs
right.
and having to actually yeah. manage a short-term rental. I don't manage my properties. Never have, don't ever plan on it. I hire managers on my properties because that's not a part that I love. I love owning these properties. Right. I love visiting them. I love saying I have a mountain house, a beach house, yeah. you know, whatever, like the desert we like to go down. Like I like having these different types of properties. Mm. I don't like managing them. I don't like dealing with check-ins and check-outs and turns and everything else. Right. So I don't do it.
Right.
So I don't get burned out on them in that sense. But yes, if you're going to be, I tell people all the time, do not manage properties to save money.
Right.
Manage properties because you love hospitality. There. Otherwise, that burnout happens real fast.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's where the root of it comes from. So, okay, you answer. All right. Last question here. Thought of this over the weekend. Are STRs impacted by inflation? Do investors need to care about inflation? That's the main thing. I go, if inflation is hurting the general public and the general public is the one booking your property, do investors care about inflation, or is this kind of no? Because we've seen in the past before, no matter how much people are spending or things are shut down, people love to travel, right? We saw that number. It continues to grow up.
Yeah.
So let's assume...
Let's assume consumer spending stays at least where it's at. Right?
Okay.
We keep seeing it grow. Mm-hmm. Well, let's assume it just kind of stays where it's at. There's a lot of this is a mainstream asset class. People are going to figure out a way to spend money on hospitality, short-term rentals, mm-hmm. right? And so, but inflation is, I mean, inflation just by definition is that, you know, there's more money or you have to pay more for the same thing, mm-hmm. right? And so, it actually helps your revenue because now all of a sudden your $300 a night property is charging $400 a night because mm-hmm. your dollar doesn't pay as much, right? So now I got to pay more for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Same is true with properties. Properties, mm-hmm. when we're in really inflationary times, mm-hmm. all of a sudden those properties have a little bit of a forced appreciation a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden your $500,000 doesn't buy you nearly what it used to buy you. Right. And so because of inflation, it actually makes it seem like those properties are appreciating as mm-hmm. well. So it is, you actually get the benefit of it because of, let's say you have 5% inflation. That's high, right? Mm-hmm. I can do 5% numbers in my head easy. So let's say you have 5% inflation and that property, all of a sudden that $500,000 property goes up to 525, mm-hmm. right? And, but I only had $100,000 down on that $500,000 mm-hmm. property. So my buying power dropped by 5%. So now mm-hmm. that $100,000 is only, next year is only going to buy me $95,000 worth of stuff, right? Instead mm-hmm. of $100,000. However, mm-hmm. the reason it's a hedge against inflation is because my $100,000 is parked in this asset that went up $25,000. Mm-hmm. So I net lost $5,000 buying power with my 100 grand, but because it's in an asset that went up $25,000, my net positive is still a positive $20,000 on that return. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
So it's a hedge against inflation as well. So that's tangible assets and property with leverage. And that's just not just short-term rentals, that's real estate in general, that's why they always say it's a great hedge against inflation. So in inflationary times, we really, really like tangible assets like real estate, especially assets that we have some leverage in.
Because it allows you to park your money in a vehicle that's going to make, well, I shouldn't say vehicle, but I mean, you're going to park your money in an asset that's going to grow.
Yeah.
Even as inflation grows, that also helps counteract in a way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So even though inflation's going up, because if inflation is truly going up across the board, mm-hmm. then your buying power of your dollar goes down.
Right. Right.
And so now I have to spend more money to buy the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, not more money to buy that exact same $500,000 asset. Next year, I have to spend $525 mm-hmm. in that example mm-hmm. to buy that same asset. Mm-hmm. So it looks like appreciation, and really it's driven a lot by inflation.
Mm. What a good episode today, man. We covered a lot of stuff.
We did cover a lot.
47 minutes, man. We went into some good stuff. This is educational, huh?
All right. I like it.
Good. That was it. That's all I got.
Okay, we'll wrap up, guys. We appreciate you spending 47 minutes with us. It's a longer episode. You know how valuable your time is. We appreciate you spending with us. And so at the end of every episode, I ask you two favors. We don't run ads or sponsorships on this show. The only way it grows is if you guys like it and share it. If you know somebody else would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. We appreciate that. And if you have more than 30 seconds on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, give us a thumbs up or a review. We always read them and appreciate them. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.